Hello, we're back with a panel discussion about coping with holiday stress. If you are just tuning in, my name is Aaron Surma, and I work with Juno Youth Services. And I'm joined by other members of the Juno Suicide Prevention Coalition, including Crystal Borland, Executive Director of NAMI Juno, Jan Reese, Training and Outreach Coordinator for the Suicide Prevention Coalition, and Michelle Bollier, Private Practice Therapist in town. One of the Suicide Prevention Coalition's goals is to reduce the stigma around mental health and suicide in our town. And stigma, for those who don't know, are the prejudicial attitudes and discriminating behavior that get attached to something that is seen as undesirable. And the social effects of this can include exclusion, poor support, poor quality of life, and low self-esteem. And we see this happening a lot with mental illness in particular, where people feel uncomfortable asking for help, offering help, and that can get into something more formal like saying, I feel depressed, I feel anxious. And it can even be less defined than that. Some people don't like saying, I feel stressed out, or hey, you're my friend, you look stressed out. And stigma is the thing that gets in the way of these otherwise simple human conversations. Crystal Borland, as executive director of NAMI Juno, can you tell us what the heck NAMI Juno is and what you do to address stigma?
Yeah. So NAMI Juno is part of a larger organization called the National Alliance on Mental Illness. So we work here locally and statewide, but throughout the country. And we're primarily an education and advocacy organization. And as you talk a lot about bringing in stigma, it's so important that we have organizations that are really getting out the word about mental illness and really kind of demystifying some of the myths or the stereotypes that are out there. And the reality is that we're all really impacted. I mean, one in five of us are, you know, living with a mental health condition. We all know people in our lives who are struggling, whether that's a family member, a friend, a neighbor, a coworker. Yet we have a really hard time talking about mental illness within our communities and within this country. One of the best ways to combat stigma is through public awareness and education. And I really think the more we share accurate information and personal stories, encourage conversations, the more we make it okay for people to seek out help, the more we make it okay for people to talk about what's going on with them. Aaron, you asked me a little bit about, again, the organization. And so here locally, we're really highlighting people's stories, people that have been affected by mental illness. And we do this through education programs. We do this through offering support groups. And all of these programs are led by individuals who either live with mental illness or mental illnesses within their family. And I think it's really important to have people that are doing well in recovery and people who are willing to talk about their own experiences. It really makes it transformative in these programs for people who may have just gotten a recent diagnosis or who maybe have never talked about mental illness within their family to be in a room full of people who understand what they're going through.
And what are some of these programs?
Yeah, so we have programs. Family to Family is one we've offered for many years in the community. That's a 12-session education program for any family member, caregiver. We also have had some friends who have attended. And it's a education program that takes people through the various resources both within our community. It helps people understand the mental health system better. It teaches communication skills. How do we really communicate with our loved one and have these open and honest conversation when someone in our life is struggling. And also is really educational so people can learn more about different types of mental health conditions and different treatment and recovery options that are available.
Who normally joins a group like that?
Yeah, so if you had someone in your life who was struggling and you really wanted to become more informed and more supportive to that person, we see a lot of parents who join, and we have a program that's for families that have children or youth, young adults that may have emerging mental health needs, and they're really just trying to figure out what's going on.
Do you see the stigma around mental illness get lowered for the people who participate in this group?
Absolutely. Yeah, they're in a room full of people who are having those conversations and who are going through similar challenges. And so I also think it allows people to kind of create their own narrative of what's going on, and to really be able to, you know, share that, I think, within the family, of course. And then sometimes we have participants who go on to be real advocates for mental health and who are then willing to share their story in a more public space. And I think that's so critical because we need people to have, you know, to talk about what they're struggling with and how they overcame if we're going to kind of change that stigma that we see that's so rampant.
So you appear on radio shows in panel discussions. You have a 12-week course for family members of people with mental illness. What other programs do you have?
Yeah, so we also have reoccurring and ongoing support groups for people who are struggling with their own mental health. And again, we have programs and support groups for family members and friends who are supporting a loved one. I think as caregivers and family members, we have to remember there's a lot of self-care that we need. And so we have those programs for families as well as for individuals who are struggling with mental health challenges. We also run more public forums. We have a program called Inside Passages, and this is an opportunity for anyone who wants to learn more about topics on mental health and wellness. So we have that monthly this time of year in the winter when it's nice and dark outside and we're all coming in to learn more within our communities.
So let's say I'm a person and I'm in my car right now, and that sounds interesting to me. How would I find more about it?
NAMIJUNO.org is a great resource. Our website has all of our programming. So NAMIJUNO.org is a great way to get in touch with us.
I think one of the things that she just mentioned was overcoming stigma by talking. And that's an incredible way to get information to other people, a way to share feelings, and a way to bring up topics that others may feel uncomfortable about. Because the more we talk about something, the more others are going to be acceptable to hearing it. I had a cousin, 2012, he died by suicide. And it was like the community didn't talk about what had happened. They whispered and talked about it, you know, behind closed doors, but there was really no recognition that this person had died by suicide or what was going on with their family. One of the things that was bothersome to me was that They didn't reach out to their community to find resources that could support them or to reach out to counselors or places such as NAMI that could help someone to overcome the death of a loved one or to help someone get support with the suicide of a loved one. Sadly, 6 months later, his son died by suicide. It was then that the mom decided that she wanted to become an advocate. I think we just had hit on that when you become an advocate, you talk more and educate more. And she did become an advocate. She did start with suicide prevention, joining the Suicide Prevention Coalition in our hometown. And she organized a Live for Levi campaign where she was able to go to the high schoolers and talk to them about mental health, talk to them about their feelings and how that they are able to share those feelings with others to get over the stigma of men don't cry. Men do cry. Men should cry. Men do have emotions. That people do have emotions. People do have stress. People do have anxiety. People do have mental illness or something that they need to ask help for. And so by doing that, she was able to collaborate resources in the community to educate others and allow them to know that it is a topic that does need to be talked about, that should be talked about. You know, you can talk sitting around with others, and that also that people can actually ask for help without, you know, by feeling comfortable by asking for help when they don't feel well.
Yeah, Jan, this is Crystal. And yeah, I think, you know, what she did in terms of her advocacy is so important. And she, you know, going, you mentioned talking to youth in the high schools, something that we do here. And I think it's really impactful, not only to hear those personal stories, but also I think giving a language, you know, to youth, giving a language to how to express oneself. These can be really confusing and complex topics. And so educating youth is is certainly important. And I think, you know, having people and ambassadors in the community who are willing to share their story. I think we're seeing a lot of that nationally, too, just with celebrities. I mean, more and more, and maybe it's because I'm in the mental health field in the world, so I look for it. But I feel like there are so many more people talking about their struggles, and not just as not as a weakness, but also as a strength and how they overcame and how they recovered.
Yeah, and Crystal, I agree with you. Sadly, some of the lives that we've lost by people who have died by suicide in the last year have been musicians and celebrities that have allowed people to talk about prevention of suicide, education of prevention, talking about feelings, asking someone directly, do you feel suicidal? The things that we need to do when someone actually says to a family member or to a friend, I don't feel well. Well, what do you mean you don't feel well? Well, I feel sad. And then to start that conversation of, you know, what does sad mean to you? Are you thinking about suicide? And then know on your referrals if that person actually says yes.
And the exchange that you're describing is difficult for a lot of people, and understandably. And a big part of that is because of the stigma around these conversations, which means that we don't know how to have the conversation. We don't feel comfortable with it. So I think it's very easy to picture the advocate who's very eloquent and speaking in public. It's easy to see how they've broken through the stigma, but normal people like us dealing with a celebrity death, a family member death, how do we get to the nuance of fumbling through the conversations that help break stigma? Michelle, do you have anything to say about that?
Yeah. One thing that I think is we don't say things because we don't know what to say. And we're so worried about messing up that we actually do more harm in not saying anything. So one resource that I really like is called The Mighty. What I love about The Mighty's philosophy is they highlight the wisdom of people with lived experience. And a great article of theirs is called 15 Questions People Who've Been Suicidal Wish They Had Been Asked. And to me, this is a brilliant kind of legal cheating. Whenever you feel tongue-tied by a stigma, is to just seek out the wisdom of people who have had these kinds of experiences. And the first question on the list that struck me was from an attempt survivor who said, I wish someone had just said to me, do you want to hang out? And they were able to articulate that when they're having a hard time, they really isolate. And I think in our culture, we have this idea, oh, you know, if someone is really depressed or if they're suicidal, we almost hot potato it to a mental health professional, or we think, oh my gosh, this is scary. I don't know what to do. I don't want to say the wrong thing. And then we leave the person alone. This is the worst thing that we can do. Right. So sometimes people don't want necessarily to talk, or they might have a hard time articulating what they're going through, but they might just want company. Right. So it hits my heart that this person said, one of the things that I wish is just someone had just asked me, do you want to hang out with me? Do you want to spend time with me? Other questions on the list that I loved were someone who said, can you tell me what it feels like so I can understand what you're going through? Kind of like Jan just said, okay, so you're saying you feel sad. Can you tell me more about what sad means to you? Maybe trying to figure out, is there something going on that's bringing up the sadness, or it just feels like the sadness is just coming up out of nowhere, and that's part of what's confusing about it. But it's almost like we lose our human ability to ask questions and be curious because we're so frightened. And I think that the number one thing that I always want to communicate is go back to your basic human ability to connect with others, right? To really show up, to be authentic, to want to hear what the person has to say, even if it's hard. Another question from that article was, what's the worst thing you're thinking or feeling right now? And the attempt survivor said that there's such a push in our culture to make everything seem positive, to seem tidy, to seem like, yep, I'm okay. everything's together, you don't have to worry about me, and we might not be feeling that at all. So if you say to someone, are you actually okay, or I imagine you're having a hard time right now, for instance, if you know that someone lost someone to suicide, we might anticipate, wow, this could be painful and complicated, and to just let them know, I'm a person that you can be real with, you can tell me what's going on, and I'm going to be able to handle it. And part of fighting stigma is just being able to name and acknowledge that these things can be hard to talk about. So you could literally say to someone, I don't exactly know what you might need, or I don't exactly know what you're going through, or I might not have the exact right words to say, but I want you to know that I'm here for you. I'm thinking of you. Is there anything I can do to help? And to really recognize that we are so attuned to one another that we can feel when someone else is freaked out by what we're having, versus we can feel when another person is able to show up for us and say, I'm going to be here with you regardless of whatever you have going on.
And Michelle, I think, you know, it's difficult for a lot of us because we want to have the answers and we want to know how to help and we want to make things better. And I think what I hear you saying is just showing up and being willing to have the conversation. And it's okay if you feel awkward about it, and even to acknowledge that, but that you are a person who will be there and who will listen and be in that, what can feel like a very uncomfortable and awkward space with someone. And it also reminds me to keep being inclusive and inviting someone or reaching out to that person if they're withdrawing. You know, continuing to show up for that person is just a wonderful thing that you can do.
Absolutely. It just struck me when you were saying that actually when we kind of own, I'm not totally sure, it's a little bit awkward, I feel kind of weird about it, but I'm doing it anyway. We're literally modeling for the person, oh, you can do this. You can step forward and still connect, even if you're not doing it perfectly, even if it's clunky, even if you don't have the right words, right? So we're kind of saying, look, I go out on a limb for you. And that other person is recognizing, like, this is how I do it. It takes vulnerability in both directions. And when we show someone, look, I am doing this, that makes the other person more comfortable to be able to say, oh, okay, they just showed me how to do this. I can trust them. I can do that too.
And Michelle, I agree with that. And most recently, in the last couple of weeks, I ran into a person that I consider to be a good friend of mine. She's very outgoing and very positive. And when I saw her, you know, it was like normal, oh, hugs, it's so good to see you, blah, blah, blah. And then she told me, I'm not feeling well. And I'm like, oh, no, you know, are you sick? Are you okay? And she said, no, actually, I'm feeling very depressed. And she allowed me to say to her, because it came such a surprise, a conversation I wasn't ready for at that exact moment, that I said, can you give me 1 second? Because, you know, gears were shifting and I was trying to change my thoughts of, we're moving from, I just hugged you and I'm all excited, to, I'm going to have to start asking you questions. And so she appreciated that I was honest enough to say, whoa, can you just give me 1 second? And then I started to ask her, are you okay today? Are you okay right now? And the more information she gave me, I would ask more questions to make sure that I was able to refer her to resources that might be able to help her. And so, you know, we may feel uncomfortable asking a question, but also they may feel uncomfortable telling you how they feel. So more questions, more answers, the better we can determine the situation and be able to give as much as we can, and then know when we can't give anymore and it needs to be referred to someone else.
Yeah, absolutely. I think what both of you just touched on is we have such a sense in our culture of wanting to fix it, wanting to problem solve. And so it sort of comes more easily to us to think about, oh, okay, you know, this person lost a loved one. I'm going to make them a casserole and drop it off, right? That's a concrete thing we can do. And that's incredibly loving and supportive. And that might be what a person needs. But people might also have a lot of casseroles and that's not what they need. So I think just having this stance of, turning to the person and showing your openness and saying, I'm here, what do you need? And maybe in your own mind, having a sense of, here are some of the things I could offer if the person doesn't know in that moment what they need, that could be really helpful. But basically, you're signaling to the person, they're the expert on their own experience. They know what they're going through. They don't need to change or get better for you. And they don't have to provide you with something you can do so that you feel better about the situation, right? But that you're really listening and you're taking your cues from them.
I think this has all been really helpful to give people a little push to reach out to their friends. And hopefully this is planting a seed with some folks. We heard from Crystal about some resources to continue breaking the stigma and promote these conversations that NAMI Juno provides. Jan, does the Juno Suicide Prevention Coalition have anything like a newsletter or social media that also helps promote breaking the stigma of asking for help with mental illness?
We do. We actually have a monthly newsletter from the Juno Suicide Coalition, and we also have, we're found on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And in the last month, we become more active in the community. We were at the Arts Walk on Friday, where we handed out balloons with a light in them to say, be the light in someone's life. And most recently, we had the Taku Tattoo Special to recognize survivors of suicide in the community, which I thought was an excellent time to bring people together. We were there for 8 hours that day, heard a lot of stories, a lot of emotions, and a lot of time to talk to one another about, again, breaking the stigma and being able to have that conversation of whether someone was a survivor of suicide or someone had lost a person or a loved one to suicide.
Yeah, and I just want to mention some other good sites in addition to that. There's some, you mentioned the Mighty Michelle, and that's one of, that's a favorite of mine. I go there a lot, and I think it's wonderful how many people are sharing their experiences through that forum. There's some ones like Man Therapy. We talked a little bit earlier about that whole manning up, and we need to have these conversations among men as well. And there is, it's a funny but also very informative website called Man Therapy, and just encouraging that, yes, men, we can have these conversations too. For youth, teenmentalhealth.org, I would say for teachers, parents, if you're a young adult yourself, it just is a great resource, a learning platform, and has some different ways you can get involved via social media. If you're on namijuna.org's website, there's some articles and resources on our page. So if you want to just read more into mental health and get some resources, there's a lot of great stuff on there.
I think this has been great and thorough about promoting peer-to-peer conversations. And I just want to mention that one of the goals of the Juno Suicide Prevention Coalition is not only to promote these conversations among friends and family, but also in the medical community. There's a lot of research that of people who die by suicide, much more than 50% have had an interaction with their medical provider in the previous 2 months. And medical providers are somebody that a lot of folks who don't feel comfortable talking to friends and family do feel comfortable talking to. And they are people who are trained to speak with you about depression, about feelings of suicide. And that is another good opportunity to speak when you don't feel comfortable bringing this up to friends and family.
Yeah. And I think there's some other, you know, you mentioned earlier, Aaron, the care line. And so I think, you know, talking to anonymously and as a friend or a caregiver, I've actually called the care line and I've called other suicide prevention hotlines as someone who was worried about someone in my life. So those are also anonymous resources for you as a friend and a family member. If you're concerned about someone and you're not exactly sure how to have that conversation, or maybe when you're in a crisis with that person and need some guidance.
What was your experience with the care line? How was that?
Yeah. Well, my main experience was just calling to make sure they would talk to friends and family members, because I share that within our programs. And I think, you know, like you said, they're available. They're there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. They're trained professionals. And what I love, too, is that they've started with the text line. And so I think a lot of people are more comfortable in this space of just texting messages and getting support. And I did have an experience, and they were just they were able to convey that concern and empathy and also good information over text and not just phone. And so I was pretty impressed by that.
And the phone number for the care line, once again, is 877-266-4357. And somebody in Alaska answers all of those calls. I think we're going to take a short break now. When we come back, we'll have our last segment about coping with holiday stress.